Before we get to today's morning show, I wanted to mention something about the podcast version of the morning show, in which you can hear a different morning show 7 days a week. Something is very special is going to be shared on tomorrow, Saturday's podcast of the morning show. Tomorrow night, there's a special concert at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Racine at 7 o'clock. And the headliner is the one and only Zachary Scott Johnson, a really talented young musician born and raised in Racine who now makes his home in the Twin Cities. And in addition to being a very busy professional musician, husband, father, Zach presides over a really fun thing on YouTube called the Song A Day Project. And he has been doing that for 10 years. In honor of his 10th anniversary, he has gathered together some of his favorite musical colleagues and friends from southeastern Wisconsin to join him on the concert tomorrow night. Tickets will be available at the door if you want to come and be part of that concert tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, again at First Presbyterian Church. That's 716 College Avenue in downtown Racine. But in honor of the concert, tomorrow on the podcast version of the morning show, I'm going to be replaying a conversation Zach and I had on the occasion of the 3,000th episode of the Song A Day Project. So if you want to hear that conversation, you need to access the podcast version of the morning show. It's available through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure you look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. And now today's morning show is coming up in a moment. And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. A little later in the hour, we're going to pay musical tribute to the late Queen Elizabeth II by playing for you a brilliant piece of music that was composed especially for her coronation in 1953. But we'll spend most of the hour with our good friend Nan Calvert paying her monthly visit to the Morning Show. And today's conversation is about orchids, one of the most beautiful of all flowers, and more specifically, the beautiful orchids that are native to the state of Wisconsin. Nan's guest, Brandon Corder, is a graduate student in botany at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and we had Brandon on the morning show a couple of months ago to talk about mosses. Today, we turn to another topic in which he is an expert, Wisconsin orchids. In the interview we recorded yesterday, I asked Nan to explain how she came up with this idea.
I found out that Brandon is an expert, if you will, on native orchids for Wisconsin. And I thought it would be exciting to have him on as a guest because I don't think that many people know that Wisconsin has native orchid species. We often think about orchids as tropical plants, and we see them in grocery stores and big box stores and that sort of thing. And I had never met an orchid expert before, so I was really excited to have him on because I don't really know very much about orchids. All I know is that they're truly beautiful and sometimes rare, certainly unique. So I thought it would be fun to learn about those things.
Very good. So there's we are. So we're all going to be learning today about specifically Wisconsin orchids, or that's what we will spend most of our time talking with about. So Brandon Corder, we welcome you to the morning show. We're glad you can join us.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
So Brandon, first of all, tell us a little bit about your own general interest in botany. And did that come from anything or anyone in particular?
Yeah, well, I started my botany career when I was an undergrad at the University of Florida. I'm originally a Floridian, but even before that, I really grew up, I suppose, around plants and especially orchids. My dad is a native plant enthusiast in Florida and especially interested in orchids and actually even grew orchids for a time. So even when I was a kid, and I would go out all over Florida, look for native orchids, grow some different interesting specimens at home. I think that was kind of what really got me started. And yeah, I just was really thankful that I was able to really take that and continue it into grad school and really focus on now the native orchids of the Great Lakes particularly. So that's kind of what my story is, I suppose.
Very good. As Nan kind of touched on, most of us have seen orchids probably when you go into kind of a typical grocery store. There'll be something there that is labeled as an orchid. But I think most of us have only the vaguest idea of really of what an orchid is. I mean, that is, what does a particular flower have to be in order to be categorized as an orchid? Before we focus a little more on native orchids of Wisconsin, give us more of the general picture of what orchids are and where they grow.
Yeah, that's a great question. So orchids are a family of flowering plants. And, you know, when I say a family of plants, that really means that it's a group of plants that share some kind of relatedness in like an evolutionary sense. So, you know, you might also be familiar with the pine family or the rose family or the sunflower family. So the orchid family is just another family of flowering plants. And actually, it's one of the largest and most diverse families of flowering plants, if not the most diverse. So, you know, there's about 30,000 orchids or so, which is 10% of all flowering plants in the entire world, all flowering plant species in the entire world. So, you know, that's a pretty staggering number. So, you know, within that number, there's a ton of different diversity. And it can be kind of hard to actually come up with similarities that all of them share. But just as a really basic couple of things that all orchids share, they have this very special type of reproductive organ called a column, which is just kind of where the anther and the female parts of the plant kind of combine together into one long little structure in the middle. So that's something that's more or less unique to orchids. The pollen is also unique. The pollen is in this kind of mass rather than, you know, a bunch of tiny little pollen grains. The flower has a lot of different variation in it between different orchid species. If you look up, you know, any orchids in a greenhouse, you'll see that they look very different from each other. But most of them share this very showy lip, which we call a labellum. And if you have an orchid in your office or, you know, in your house right now, you can kind of see that showy lip kind of pointing downward. And it's usually a different color than the rest of the petals of the flower. So those are a couple things. Most of the orchids grow on trees if you look at orchids all over the world. But in our part of the world, you know, in the temperate regions, they actually grow in the ground. But basically a lot of diversity in orchids.
Wow, that's amazing. And I assume with that many different species of orchids, 30,000 you said, I would assume that then orchids grow just about everywhere on Earth. I'm not saying Antarctica, but but I mean, otherwise, are we really talking about orchids growing just about everywhere on the planet?
Yeah, well, you know, us orchid biologists, we like to say that orchids are some of the most successful plants in the entire plant kingdom, just because of what you said, that they really can grow all over the world. Now, they're most diverse in the tropical regions, you know, especially in tropical South America, in Southeast Asia, in Africa. But, you know, just earlier this year in July, I was up in Alaska, and, you know, I saw plenty of orchids up north of the Arctic Circle, almost to the Arctic Ocean. So, you know, they certainly get all over the place.
That's like the last thing on Earth that we would ever expect. So what Nan was saying, what Nan was saying earlier is true. That is, most of us, when we think of orchids, we think of something that's been flown here from the tropics. But that, in a sense, while it might be true that there are all kinds of tropical orchids, by no means is that the sum total of orchids on the planet.
Yes, that's correct. So, you know, as I mentioned, about 30,000, maybe 25,000 to 30,000 species of orchids more are being discovered and named every year, and maybe even every month. If you look at just the United States. We don't have 30,000. We have about 230 species in the United States. And, you know, that's pretty much, that number mostly comes down to the fact that orchids are just less diverse in the temperate regions. However, we do have a very beautiful array of orchids in our country. And actually, even if you dig a little bit deeper into that number, about 50 species of orchids are native to Wisconsin, which I think is pretty neat. And, you know, if you stack that up with other states, that's actually towards the top of diversity for orchids. I believe Florida has about 120 species of orchids. That's, you know, the most, that's the highest species number for the United States. Kind of makes sense because Florida gets into that tropical, subtropical region. But, you know, in the Great Lakes, we actually have a pretty good diversity of orchids here. And, you know, that was something that, of course, was interesting to me when I decided to come here to study those.
Hmm.
So, yeah, about 50 in Wisconsin.
For those of you just joining us, today's morning show is Nan Calvert's monthly visit to the program, and we're so happy to be reconnecting with Brandon Corder, who is a botany graduate student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And as he was saying earlier, one of the great loves of his life are orchids. And in particular, he's quite interested in the orchids that are native to the state of Wisconsin, some 50 different species of orchids that are native to Wisconsin. Brandon, I think it would be interesting for us to know, and Nan can join in, I'm sure, if you can kind of help us understand how one determines that a given species of orchid is native to Wisconsin. I mean, obviously, just because something grows here doesn't mean that it's native. We all know all too well about how many things are growing here that, in a sense, don't belong here or didn't originally come from here. But how does one determine the origins of a given species of plant and the fact that in this case, for instance, that these orchids are native to Wisconsin?
Yeah, that's another great question. So one advantage we have in our region, at least, is that we have very few non-native orchids that actually are established in natural areas here. And very rarely do you see orchids cultivated that are non-native. So out of those 49 or 50 species that we have in Wisconsin, there's actually only one that is non-native, although it is very widespread. And that's called the broad-leaved helberine, or Epipactis helberine. It kind of has this interesting kind of yellow-purple flower, many flowers on it. It has a long bloom period. It's probably blooming August and September, depending on where you are in the state. So most of the orchids that you come across in Wisconsin are going to be native orchids. That's a little bit different than a state like Florida, where I'm most familiar with before Wisconsin, where there are several very common non-native orchids that were introduced here from either East Asia or Africa, sometimes Southeast Asia. That's the first thing. If anybody is ever interested in trying to figure out the identity of one of the orchids, you know, if you are finding something and you aren't sure if it's native or non-native, I always recommend, you know, some of these new apps that you can use to identify plants, like iNaturalist, or, you know, talk to an extension agent. The Wisconsin State Herbarium has a great website to look up photos of native plants. Those are some of the resources you might use, but again, only one non-native species in Wisconsin.
Hmm. So in other words, if we see an orchid in Wisconsin and it's not in a flower shop, if it's growing, it almost certainly is native to Wisconsin then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nan, can you just expand a little further on kind of the whole notion of how we determine whether or not a given plant is native? I mean, is that a complicated challenge?
No, it's actually not complicated. So just to piggyback onto what Brandon was saying, you know, we know the origin of the non-native species, invasive species, that plague our various and sundry ecosystems, our various and sundry habitats. So it's easy to determine whether those are native or not. And sometimes it's right in the name. Mm. So when you think about Korean spice bush or Japanese maple or, you know, et cetera and so forth, yes, yeah, it didn't come from here originally. We also have something that is extremely helpful in determining whether or not a plant is native. And there was an extensive plant survey done several hundred years ago by John T. Curtis, and we have his works, and those are used with regularity in determining whether or not a plant is native. And then, you know, you have people like Brandon, and you have people, you know, who have spent their lives studying this very subject and who can help you understand what a plant is, whether it's native or not, and what makes it native. And quite frankly, Wisconsin is very lucky in that regard. We do, you know, we used to have separate herbaria in the state, but then due to budget cuts, those were combined. But we still have that amazing resource, as Brandon said. We also have a group, let me put in a plug, called Wild Ones, and they have chapters all over the United States. And certainly up north in Wisconsin, there are chapters, and they know our orchids, no doubt. They're quite familiar with them. So there are so many resources, extension as well. So many resources. And yes, iNaturalist is actually a really good app. There are some plant apps out there that, you know, not so great, but iNaturalist is really quite good.
Very good. So, Brandon, down in this corner of the state, that is more in kind of the southeastern corner of the state, what would be some of the native orchids that one are, is apt to find?
Yeah, okay, great question. So I just pulled up a little map on my computer before we started talking, just to see, you know, out of that 49 to 50 species, you know, how are they distributed in the state, and, you know, what counties have the highest diversity of orchids. So just to kind of step back just for a second, you know, in Door County, you know, if anybody here is familiar with the Ridges Sanctuary, you know, that's like a really famous spot nationwide for finding orchids, and they have 29 species in Door County. In Vilas County, they have at least 20 species, Oconto County about 22, and then, you know, in my area in Dane County, we have about 19 or 20 species. A couple of those are quite rare. Looking at Racine and Kenosha County, they each have about 8 native species of orchids, and predominantly those are species that are found kind of in a more of a prairie type of context. So, you know, we have orchids here that are found in prairies, that are found in the sides of streams, in kind of a southern type of maple forest, northern types of conifer forest. So, you know, different orchids are found in different types of habitats. Most of the orchids that are found in that southeast corner of Wisconsin tend to be found in your prairies, especially your wet prairies. If you've ever gone to Chewaukee Prairie or something like that, that's kind of where most of your orchids are found. And the most common orchids in that area are known as the Lady's Tresses orchids or the Spiranthes orchids. And these are kind of these small orchids that are, they're under a foot tall in most cases, that have this spiral of white flowers that looks a little bit like a braided hair. Mm. So those Spiranthes orchids, they actually bloom around this time of the year. They're kind of a later blooming orchid, like August, September. So yeah, those are something you should keep an eye out for if you're ever in any kind of wet to kind of middle wet type of prairie, especially in that side of the state this time of the year.
Mm. So how easy is it to grow orchids? I mean, is it better to just experience them in the wild, or is does it make sense for somebody to try to add this particular kind of beauty to their own lawn, to their own garden?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And, you know, this is the question that has vexed any person who's interested in orchids for a very long time. So I guess what I would say to start is that orchids are very challenging to grow in most cases. we could talk a little bit more about why that is. It kind of relates to my research, which is that orchids have these very intimate relationships with fungi in the soil.
Hmm.
And they also have very specific habitat requirements. So, you know, for most of us, we won't have the conditions to grow our native orchids in our yards. You sometimes see that people have had success. You know, most of the time it's very advanced growers. But, you know, there is a reason why you can't go to the supermarket and just buy seeds of, say, a lady flipper or something like that. They're very difficult to grow, and they take a very long time to actually get mature enough to actually flower. Now, if you are very interested in this kind of thing, there are some folks in Wisconsin that you can search up on Google. I don't have any names off the top of my head, but you know, if you look it up on Google, you will find people who do sell native orchids that are, you know, ethically raised, and you can give it a try. Some people have some success with a few different types, but you know, unfortunately, they're also kind of like lollipops for deer and other other herbivores. So, you know, I don't know. I've never had any success with anything like that. But, you know, if you're really interested in growing orchids, the indoor species that are mostly tropical, that's one thing you can try. Or I just would tell everybody to get outside and just start looking around, you know.
Yes, and what I would like to say is, please, if you know where orchids are growing, native orchids, please don't dig them up and bring them to a very different habitat, because they won't survive. I've had so many people say that they have properties, you know, in Door County or up north, and their orchids growing there. They dig them up, bring them back down, and they die. And and it's very painful to hear that. So they're very specific in their requirements and in their habitats. So just look at them and marvel and be in awe of their beauty, but leave them where they're supposed to be. And that really goes for any native plant that you find. You know, don't necessarily dig it up and bring it back to where you live. It might not survive, and it may very well be that, you know, it's a special concern species, or it's already listed as threatened or endangered. So just, you know, look at them and take pictures of them, draw them, but leave them alone.
Leave them alone. Leave them where they are. Leave them at home.
That's right.
In their home.
In their home.
In their home. Brandon, I would be really curious to hear a little more about this strange relationship that most orchids have with fungi in the soil. Can you just kind of take us inside that perplexing thing you're describing?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, for anybody out here who gardens, you know, if most seeds, you know, of plants that we find, you know, we know that they're quite small, but orchids kind of take that to a new level. The largest orchid seeds, for the most part, are smaller than 1 millimeter. So they really are like little dust seeds. And an orchid will actually produce, you know, probably tens of thousands of seeds, of these tiny little dust seeds. And in those seeds, you know, there is a little embryo, but what they don't really have is a lot of food. So, you know, if you think like a walnut or something, it's kind of a meaty thing. There's a lot of food in there for that plant to get to start growing, you know, when it's underground and about to come up. But orchid seeds don't really have that at all. And part of the reason for that is this really close and oftentimes contentious issue that the relationship that they have with fungi. So when an orchid seed gets established somewhere, you know, just that little seed lands in a suitable place, it will be quickly colonized by a fungus that lives in the soil. Sometimes these are, well, oftentimes they're not the type of fungi that make a, like a mushroom, but it's often just a little fungus that just lives in the soil that kind of makes a little crust or something like that. So it's kind of an obscure type of fungus, but it's one that the orchid really needs. So the fungus will infiltrate the orchid, probably thinking, hey, this is something that I can eat. And then that's where the orchid actually turns the tables on the fungus and starts to actually eat the fungus itself. And it actually really does dissolve and start to devour the filaments of the fungus. And all orchids, for the most part, as far as we know at least, start their life out eating fungi. And we call this special trait mycoheterotrophy. Myco meaning fungus, heterotroph meaning eating something. So it eats fungi to get all of its nutrients. At that point, the orchid seedling can get established enough to actually grow leaves and start to do its own photosynthesis to get its food, at least in most cases. But really throughout its entire life, most orchids really keep this intimate relationship with fungi where they can continuously devour the fungi, which now live in the roots of the orchid, and, you know, take a lot of nutrients from those fungi in the soil. So it's kind of interesting right now to people interested in conservation of orchids, because different orchids have different specific fungi that they associate with. So, you know, you might imagine that if we knew a little bit more about these particular fungi, that we might have better success in how to propagate orchids, how to reintroduce native orchids into places where they've been lost, because they are declining in a lot of places. Really, that fungal, we call a symbiont, is really a hot topic right now and really crucial to orchid biology.
And this does help us understand why orchids don't do well when you pluck one out of the wild and plunk it into your own backyard or a pot in your living room or whatever. It very likely, almost certainly, is not going to have that same fungi diet available to it in order to thrive. So it just reinforces what Nan was saying about the importance of leaving them alone where they are able to grow. Brandon, in our last few minutes, I think it's important for us in talking about native orchids to talk about the good that they do. And Nan, please join in as well, because we talk about this quite a lot on this program, the fact that native plants are a positive presence in the world around us for a lot of different reasons. Is that true when it comes to native orchids?
Yeah, I of course would say so. I mean, you know, just on a basic level, orchids, they tend to really prefer these undisturbed areas. And, you know, if you go to a place and you find an orchid, then you have a pretty good idea that you're looking at a relatively healthy habitat in most cases. So, you know, there have to be a lot of other things right in that particular area to actually support a good orchid population. And, you know, for anybody here who has ever come across a beautiful patch of pink lady slipper or yellow lady slipper, I'm sure they can attest to that. So, you know, in my view, all native plants and all of the different other organisms, you know, be it fungi or be it, you know, insects and mammals, they all kind of contribute to this quilt, I guess, of different interactions and different relationships that really, you know, create a healthy, sustainable ecosystem. So, you know, orchids, of course, have this relationship with fungi, but they also have specific relationships with different pollinators, which, you know, it tends to be either bees or wasps or flies for our native orchids, at least. Really, all of these things together, you know, are needed. Any part that you're missing, you know, it just makes it less sustainable. It makes it that you're missing a piece there. So, you know, that's kind of my view on our native orchids. And I just think that, you know, it's such a special thing for our state, again, to be one of the states that has one of the highest diversity of orchids. it's something that we really want to protect, and we want to keep it for the enjoyment of people into the future, you know?
Brandon, can you talk a little bit about what is that factor? Why is our state so conducive to orchids?
Yeah, that's another great question. So I mentioned a little bit earlier how most orchids are tropical, and Florida, therefore, has, you know, the greatest number of species of native orchids in the United States, just because it's tropical. You know, there's more epiphytic orchids there, et cetera. Now, it just seems like most of the temperate orchids have some different types of habitats that they really enjoy, especially places that are quite wet, you know, with a lot of decaying wood. In our area, a lot of our orchids are found in these conifer swamps. And it just so happens that the Great Lakes, especially if you get into northern Wisconsin, northern Michigan, northern Minnesota, they have a lot of those conifer swamps, a lot of those boreal forests. Those areas really support a lot of orchids. Again, you know, Vilas County, Okano County, you know, 20, 22 species of orchids there. But, you know, Door County has 29 species of orchids, and I think that part of that is because a lot of orchids really like what we call calcareous soils, so soils that are rich in calcium. And if you know about eastern Wisconsin and the geology there, going all the way up through to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, there's this band of dolomite, which is a very calcareous rock. It seems like orchids really like to grow on that type of dolomite soil, bedrock, in other words. And then, you know, to round it out, Wisconsin, you know, I just love Wisconsin so much. There's so many different habitat types here. You know, prairie, I mentioned those northern conifer swamps. I mentioned that dolomitic soils. Of course, we also have bogs here. Orchids, you know, a lot of orchid species are found in bogs. We have some of these other types of deciduous forests, these prairies. With all those different habitat types, you know, we can support orchid species that have a preference for a different type of habitat. And, you know, it kind of makes this mosaic of different habitats supporting different orchids. I think that the Great Lakes really has that great mosaic or patchwork that, you know, really can support some of the highest diversity of orchids in the United States.
So, for example, Cedarburg Bog, which is a tamarack bog, would be an example of one of the coniferous wetlands that you talked about.
Yeah, it would be. And that area, especially historically, you know, has been a great hotspot for different orchid species. Mm-hmm. You know, if anybody here has ever spent any time in a bog, especially in June, you'll see this really beautiful array of pink flowers there. And many of those are actually orchids. So we have something that's called the grass pink orchid or Calopogon. We have the rose pink orchid, which is also known as Pogonia. Of course, there's pink lady slippers. A lot of those orchids are found in bogs. So, yeah, those bogs are another great hotspot for orchids if anybody is ever wanting to do some orchid sightseeing.
And, Brandon, could you explain to us the difference between a bog and a fen?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I have to say part of it kind of depends on where you are. So I don't know why this is the case, but different states have a slightly different definition of what a bog versus a fen is. That's kind of ingrained into their DNR definitions. But how I've always learned it is not really anything to do with pH necessarily, but it has to do with where the water comes from. So in a bog, most of the water comes from rain, or it came from rain. And in a fen, most of the water comes from groundwater, like a spring. And just because of the type of geology that we have here, it just so happens that most fens tend to be more basic or have a higher pH. most bogs tend to be more acidic or have a lower pH, although that's not, strictly speaking, always the case. Mm-hmm. It's a little controversial, but that's what I would say.
It is controversial and often confusing.
Hmm. Yes.
So, Brandon, do you see yourself studying orchids, native orchids of Wisconsin, for some time to come? I mean, is this the kind of area of study in which there is still much to explore?
Yeah. So, you know, I've been doing this for, you know, 5 or so years now. And just in the time that I've been a graduate student, you know, there's been a lot of new things coming out about orchids in our state. And I think a lot of it would be interesting to continue on with in the future. So, for example, we have some orchids that are actually migrating farther north from south of Wisconsin. So new orchid species are moving into Wisconsin from Illinois. And there's actually one, Ladies Trusses Spiranthes, that I mentioned earlier, that's moving up in Wisconsin. I think that that's going to be kind of an interesting story to look at in the future because of what I mentioned before about those specific fungi. So, you know, thinking about how is this orchid able to move? Is it very general on the type of fungus it can associate with? Or did that fungus already live in Wisconsin? I think that's kind of interesting. We also have, you know, other orchids that are declining in our state. I think one of our most beautiful orchids, but also our most imperiled, is known as the fairy slipper orchid, or Calypso bulbosa. There's really only a handful, maybe less than 6 populations of that orchid in Wisconsin now. And, you know, you might wonder what is causing its decline. Does it have anything to do with the climate? Does it have something to do with the fungus? Is it some other type of situation going on? So, you know, there are a lot of ongoing, interesting stories, I think, that are occurring currently with orchids that would be interesting to pursue.
Very.
For me, I am going to, you know, kind of continue my work on the diversity of orchids in Wisconsin. And after that, I don't know, maybe it would be interesting to start to pursue some of those other questions, you know, into the future. Mm-hmm.
Well, we're glad that you took some time out of your busy schedule and busy studies to be part of the morning show today and to share with us your insights on this beautiful and unusual and wonderful flower, and especially the native orchids of Wisconsin. Brandon Corder, thank you so much for being part of the morning show today. It was great to talk with you.
Yes, thanks, Brandon.
Thank you. I really appreciate the chance to talk more.
We look forward to talking to you again. Take care. Bye-bye. That was fun.
That was very cool.
Lots of interesting information, and give us a lot to think about in terms of these beautiful flowers that are with us. So,
I think if you've never seen one, it's worth a trip to the places that Brandon mentioned. But, you know, even just to Google what a Calypso orchid looks like, or a pink lady slipper, a yellow lady slipper, they're truly and amazingly beautiful and awe-inspiring. It'll make you want to conserve them.
Very good. I know you have a couple of announcements before we go.
My goodness, there is so much going on this weekend. First off, it's Hawthorne Hollow's 30th annual Walk in the Woods Art Fair on September 10th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's grown to be one of the most popular and well-respected in southeastern Wisconsin. There will be more than 50 artists displaying their fine arts on the wooded trails and gardens of Hawthorne Hollow. Live entertainment will be there throughout the day, food and beverages for sale, and a silent auction. $10 donation per vehicle is requested, and all of the money raised will go to obviously supporting and continuing Hawthorne Hollow's wonderful mission. Then, not to be outdone, Pringle Nature Center, it's their Fall Fun Festival and World Migratory Bird Day, September 17th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Fall Fun Fest is from 11 to 3 p.m. And it will also be featuring Migratory Bird Day. So there will be a grand opening of the Nature Playground, hay rides, green exhibitors. There will be Birds of Prey with Ed Foster. Food will be available from 911 Tacos. Admission is free. Selected craft and activities will require tickets that can be purchased at the event. There will be no ATM on site, so you do have to have cash or check in order to participate. And obviously, this is a fundraiser for Pringle that goes to support all of its environmental education programming. And then, here's a big one, Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center Discovery Days on September 17th and 18th from 11 a.m. till 4 p.m. Admission for adults is $5, children $3, two or under, you're totally free. This is an important opportunity for families to try things out together. It's like a maker's fair, and everybody gets a chance to do something really interesting. So there will be scavenger hunts and other activities to have fun with. There's alpacas, bees, chickens, organic gardening. You can make butter. You can make alpaca fiber beads. Wool spinning on a spinning wheel. You can make a pendant. It's just so much fun. There'll be local food vendors. There's a silent auction that will be held online. And so you can check that out on the Eco Justice Center's website. So the proceeds will go to support the care and feeding of the 30 animals who live on the farm, as well as their many educational programs at the Eco Justice Center. So there's something to do these next few weekends for everybody.
Absolutely. It all sounds like wonderful fun. Mm-hmm. Wonderful fun. While we're announcing things, I'm giving my faculty voice recital on Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock, the theme, Songs My Father Taught Me. I can't say that anything will have anything to do with ecology, but a lot of it has to do with the beautiful world in which we live. So, but make note of all of the things that Nan just told you about. And Nan, we look forward to your visit in October.
Yes, I shall be here.
You're listening to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and we're going to finish out the hour with some music played in honor, in memory, of the late Queen Elizabeth II. This is the stirring march that was composed for her coronation in 1953, Orb and Scepter by Sir William Walton.
Thank you.
Orb and Scepter, the Coronation March for Queen Elizabeth II, composed by Sir William Walton. This recording by the Philharmonia Orchestra under Sir Adrian Bolt. Of course, played today in memory of Queen Elizabeth II. Tomorrow in the podcast version of the morning show, Zachary Scott Johnson, a rebroadcast of the interview we recorded for his 3,000th edition of his Song a Day project. Tomorrow night there's a concert at First Presbyterian Church in which Zachary celebrates the 10th anniversary of that wonderful project, which is still going strong. You can hear that on the podcast of the morning show tomorrow. And on Sunday, which is the anniversary of 9/11, you'll hear my rebroadcast of my conversation with the New York Times' Jim Dwyer and his remarkable book, 102 Minutes. To find the podcast, look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. Sunny today with a high of 81 degrees, clear tonight with a low of 61, and sunny again tomorrow, 82. A good chance of rain Saturday night into Sunday. This is WGTDHD.